Hello, and welcome to the Creating Your Own Distribution Talk. Let's see here. My name is Jesse Keating. I am the release engineer for the Fedora project. I joined Red Hat a number of years ago, specifically to manage the Fedora project and make sure the releases go out in a reasonable time and fashion. During my time at Red Hat, I have helped to create some tools that allow us to make our distribution. When we decided to merge Fedora Core and Fedora Extras together, there was a distinct lack of any useful tool, an easy-to-use tool, to create what we were then calling the Fedora distribution. Over time, we've created such tools, not only to create your own traditional install CD or DVD set, but also to create live images, which have gained lots of popularity and lots of usefulness over time. So why do people want to make a distribution? In the past, that was sort of the fun thing to do. Everybody wanted to do their own package management system. Everybody wanted to compile things their own way. Everybody wanted their own special software, their own special artwork. It was fun to make distributions. It's not so fun anymore. most of those hard problems have been solved. And these days, the reason you'd want to do your own distribution really comes down to you have some disagreement with the existing choices out there. The Debians, Ubuntu's, Fedora's, SUSE's, Slackware, all those. There's some reason that one of the many choices just doesn't work out for you. And usually that's because of the content that's in it. Either it doesn't have what you want, it has too much, and you want it to be smaller, or it just isn't compiled the way you want. Some people definitely want to do their own artwork. A lot of hardware vendors want to do a custom spin of a distribution that has their branding on it, their piece of software on it, their support software on it, something that identifies it as them rather than just slapping on whatever came from upstream. And these days, it's really not about package management. There are two pretty key package management systems out there. There's Debian's Debs, there's RPM's Red Hat's, and the other distribution's RPM. And anything outside of that is, well, it's interesting. It would be nice to solve some of the ongoing problems, but it's not all that compelling. Why would you want to do a custom Fedora distribution or use Fedora as the basis of your distribution? As I said before, we've got some really easy-to-use tools that allow you to build up what you want from the vast Fedora package set. Those tools are Pungy, which I wrote for the traditional install CD or set of CDs that lets you choose your own adventure at install time, or Live CD tools, which are more designed around having a live image of a constrained set of software with various uses of that. The live images are very flexible. They're great for doing one-time demos. You don't have to worry about handing somebody a piece of software that may or may not install on their Linux distribution. You just hand them a live image or a USB stick. Up it comes. It's got your software. You know it's working. They can get right into trying out what you want them to try out. It does allow you to do long-term use through persistence. If you're running a live image off of a USB key, you can actually make changes as you're running it, and those changes are persistent across reboots and also across different machines. So you can set up your email, set up your VPN stuff, install some extra pieces of software, use it on one laptop, go traveling, plug it into your neighbor's computer, or plug it into your friend's computer, boot it up, everything is right there for you. And it also allows you to do very controlled installations. When you install from a live image, there is no software selection. You don't have to worry about people picking the wrong thing. They get what you put on the live image, so it's very, very nice for having very predictable installs for your customer base. And as I said before, we've solved a lot of the hard problems, which is getting all of these various pieces of upstream software compiled together and working so that you can concentrate on the actual content that you care about, be it the piece of software you want to demo, be it the special application that you've compiled in a certain way. You don't have to deal with all that lower level plumbing. That's all there for you. You just add what little pieces you care about. So let's just dive right in. What is going on when you compose a distribution. And I've got two sort of comparisons going on. One is the live CD tools, which create your live images. The other is Pungy, which creates the traditional set. Both of them start off with gathering packages. Packages are the basic level of pretty much any distribution. All software comes in individual packages. With Fedora, it's no different. You tell these tools the set of packages you want. It goes out and finds them, gathers them up. Pungy runs some Anaconda tools on it, on those set of packages. Live CD tools actually install those packages into a cheroot. Pungy will divide that chunk, those sets of packages into sizable chunks that are useful for CDs or DVDs, whereas Live CD tools will continue on to do a whole bunch of post-install processing of the cheroot. And then Pungy will make those into ISOs, and Live CD tools can optionally squash down that file system and turn it into an ISO as well. A little bit more in depth. And if there's any questions along the way, please, please ask. I probably should have said this in the beginning. The first part of this is really just an idea of what the tools are and what they do. And then the second part of this is I do have with me all of Fedora 9 and a snapshot of Rawhide as of a couple of days ago. And I've got a switch and some network cables. And if anybody's interested in actually going through the process of making their own tree or live image, I can help you with that and walk you through that. I did realize that your black bags you got at registration come with a handy 1 gig USB key. So if you wanted, before you leave here today, you can actually have your own live image on that USB key as bootable, which would be kind of neat. I will warn you, though, that the key is rather slow. When I tested taking a live image I had and putting it on the key, it took about 25 minutes. So the key is a little on the slow side, but it is useful. It is kind of neat. All right, so more in depth about what's going to happen. The configuration. Both Live CD Creator, or Live CD Tools, and Pungy use Kickstart files as the basis of their configuration. Anybody who's familiar with the Red Hat world knows what a Kickstart file is. And those who are not, I'll go into a little explanation. Kickstart files are the config file that we use primarily for automated installation. It is essentially a question and answer file. The questions that you would get asked during a traditional software or traditional operating system installation are the same types of things that you can define in a Kickstart file. It allows you to do fully automated installs from the preparing the hard disk to choosing the software to doing post-configuration to rebooting, or you can leave out steps along the way and get prompted for those during the install. Because it is consumed by many tools, not the least of which Anaconda, the Red Hat installer, it was very suitable as a medium for configuring the tools which are preparing trees for things like Anaconda. There recently was a Python library that was split out of Anaconda to process these Kickstart files. It's called PyKickstart, oddly enough. It allows you to read in Kickstart files. You get Python objects. You can interact with them. You can add sections, remove sections, all that fun stuff. It is a well-known format. It's been around for many, many, many years. It's not a declarative format. It's not a XML or anything like that, which does have its downsides. So we have created our own syntax, and that gets us into trouble sometimes. But because we're moving everything to interact with the Python library, if at any point in time we want to change the format, hopefully the tools that are consuming the file will not have to be changed because just the Python library will have to change. And it has most of what Compose tools need. It allows you to define package repositories. There can be more than one. It allows you to define partitions. And in the Compose tool world, partitions are used for things like what's the size of the CD you want to target. It allows you to define a set of packages that you wish to have. That's always the important thing. And it gives you a post section. And that's where some of the magic happens with Live CD Creator. A post section in a traditional Kickstart is things that you would do to your installed system before you exit the installer, before you reboot and consider it done. It allows you to do, you know, config changes, allows you to add more software that you couldn't reference earlier, allows you to do some reporting and registration with various things. and in the live CD creator world allows you to fiddle some things that make the system usable as a live image as opposed to a traditional image. Yes?
Jesse, with regard to the Python library, so if I wanted to ask an extra question, something that was specific to my company when doing an install, in that particular case, could I make use of that Python library to do just that?
Not exactly. The questions that Anaconda ask are actually driven by Anaconda itself. And you could have, Anaconda is also Python, and Anaconda does take runtime additions to it, updates images. So you could, at runtime, or at install time, be pointing to a different image file that gets filtered into the running Anaconda process, and then that will ask those questions. There's still a very tight link between Anaconda and PyKickstart. PyKickstart is really preparing the answers for the things that Anaconda will ask. It's not exactly driving what Anaconda will ask. All right, and for the things that our Compose Tools needs that aren't necessarily answerable in a Kickstart file, we have command line arguments for the rest. Over time, we want to reduce those command line arguments so that there's less and less. And one of the things we've tried to keep going forward is that the things that affect what will be actually be inside the compose, be it the inside the live image or on the media for the compose, those types of things we really want to define in a Kickstart file. Those are the things we really want reproducible. We want that recorded somewhere rather than just having to remember what command line arcs were passed. We're trying to relegate the command line arguments for things like what the directory layout will be for the compose or what the name of the ISO will be. That type of stuff is more environmental and less inside the actual compose. So depth resolving versus depth solving. One of the parts of gathering packages is you start with a list of packages that you want. It would really kind of suck if you had to list all of the dependencies of those packages manually. That's what computers are for. So you list the packages that you want, you allow the compose tools to figure out from those what else do we need to satisfy all the dependencies. And there's two paradigms to this. In the traditional installation set world, because we're just gathering packages to give you choices to install later, we don't want to fully resolve fully solve out the depths. We want to what I've deemed depth resolve, which is for any package that has a list of requires, we find every possible satisfier of those requires, and we bring those in as well, and we repeat ad infinitum. The reason why we do this is because at install time, since you are making, again, choices about what you actually want installed in your system, what you've picked may have relevance upon what is considered a solving of a dependency. Classic example of this is mail servers. A lot of things require just a simple SMTP server, and there's a lot of things that provide SMTP server. You've got postfix, XM, sendmail, courier, all these different things. In a choose your own adventure world, if you have said, I want this piece of software which requires an SMTP server, but you also further along the line said, oh, and I want to run XM, then, or I want to run postfix, then when you go to the depth solving phase, it says, you need an SMTP server. There's already an SMTP server in our transaction set, we're done. Now, if I hadn't done that, and if when I did the tree compose, if I solved out those depths and said, this piece of software needs a mail server, XM's a mail server, I'll just throw that in. When it came time for you to make your choices later, you would only have XM to choose as a mail server, and you wouldn't be able to make those choices otherwise. Now, in the live image, it's a little different. Because the live image, you aren't making any software choices. You're choosing a live image, you're done. So when we're creating live images, we can solve those all the way down to the best possible resolver of a depth. And those are used immediately for installation.
Question?
Yes.
So
there's
when...
a couple right here first. You in the black shirt, go ahead.
Okay. So when do you depth resolve?
When?
Yeah, at what point, what tool does...
So, the Pungy tool is really preparing things for Anaconda later on. It puts Anaconda into the result of your compose, so that later when you boot, say, the CD, it launches Anaconda, and Anaconda looks at the stuff that's on the rest of the CDs and says, okay, these are your package choices, pick from here, and I'll solve them out for you and install them.
So the idea is it's preserving options.
Correct.
Presented later.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just logically solving the dependencies logically, like it will look for mail server, for example, right?
Right. The depth solving really does is it goes through the list of packages that you said you want to install. And this is when you're actually running Anaconda and trying to do an install onto hardware. You select a bunch of packages, and then Anaconda goes to solve those depths. It looks at the packages that are in the transaction set, then it looks at the set of dependencies that all of those things need. Anything that's resolved by something already in the transaction set, it considers that a closed loop. Anything that's not already in the transaction set, then it goes out to the rest of the available packages and finds the best solver, best resolver for that dependency. And just sort of repeats itself until it's plumb out of dependencies or reaches the point where it can not satisfy anything else. Okay. So that's what I meant by choose your own adventure. Pungy creates something that allows you to further reduce that package set down. It's sort of an interim reduction. The Fedora package set is large. I think it's on the order of 5,000 to 6,000 source RPMs, which create untold many sub-packages. Last time we tried to do an everything compose, I think it was on the order of 10 CDs, if not 12 CDs. That's rather cumbersome for somebody to pick through and try and choose what they actually want to install. So we use something like Pungy to create what we call the Fedora spin, which is kind of a best of breed-ish approach. We try and put on a couple of different desktop environments, GNOME and KDE. We put on a limited number of mail servers, one HTTP server. We sort of reduce things down to manageable choices. And then from there, people doing installs can reduce those choices down further to what makes sense for them. But because there is this wealth of packages available, we wanted these tools so that people could make their own simple reduction down for use elsewhere. And there's a question further in the back. Yes?
If you could say something about when there are several packages that will solve the dependency, how does it choose? What's the...
Okay. So the question is, when there are multiple possible solutions for a DEP, what is the heuristic for choosing the best? And that's something that has evolved over time into a fairly complicated algorithm, fairly complicated heuristic. And this lives in the Yum code. Everything that we do, we build upon the Yum API, and we allow that to do our satisfaction. And it really depends on sort of what are the providers and what is the dependency. Some dependencies are extremely explicit. They say, I need a so named version and architecture. Typically, there's only one or so things that actually provide that, so we don't have to make many choices there. It's the more ambiguous requires that get into some fun. So, like the previous example, I need SMTP server. There's no version information. There's no architecture information. All we have is a text string. And in our distribution, like I said, there's a number of other things that provide that text string. So we'll take those providers and then start running some heuristics on them. We'll look at, in it's really a scoring system, kind of like spam detection. We'll first look at which of these that provide this thing are the same architecture as the package that requires it. Those get a certain score. Which of them have the same base name? I think that's one of the heuristics. Those will get a score. Which of them has the shortest name? Those will get a score. And eventually, the one with the highest score wins. And that's why in the first couple of times we were trying to do, I was writing the software, XML was always the SMTP server because it had the shortest name, and the shortest name always won. It's not the most easy to understand heuristic, but just like spam detection systems, it's grown over time to sort of take what humans say, oh, that's obviously the one I want, and try and make a computer be able to make that logical decision. And a lot of times it's not logical. A lot of times it's just little bits and pieces of that matches here, that matches there, this matches there. You add up a score, and eventually you find the quote-unquote best. And there are certain cases where you wouldn't always want that best one that the computer's going to think to resolve UDEPs, and that's where you are able to exclude things from repositories. You never even consider that as a possibility of a dependency resolver. All right, let's go ahead and move on. Creating repo data. This is something that only, yes?
Before you move on from there, does the scoring also consider dependency resolution on each of the candidates as to how many other packages it might need and whether they're all available?
I don't believe so. Wouldn't quote me on that, but I do not believe that's one of the scoring mechanisms. That would really balloon out the dependency resolution time, which is something that the Yum developers have tried very, very hard to keep very, very quick. If we had to leaf node resolve out, and then because you'd have to make those same decisions later for the things you're bringing in may ambiguously require, that's sort of a exponential increase in depth solve time that I don't think anybody really wants.
So does that mean that you can get broken resolutions, or do you do backtracking on
the
If you choose a candidate and then can't resolve, what?
Yes, you can absolutely get that. If something, Yum can decide that this package is the absolute best provider for something else over here, then later we try and depth solve out its dependencies and we find something missing, that is an actual broken transaction. It will fail out and say, this is what's going on. And we sort of allow the user, or punt to the user, to sort that out for themselves and figure out exactly what needs to happen.
And that's a problem with the repository set rather than the resolver.
Right. That's something where the repository maintainer or the release engineer gets beaten over the head and say, don't let the repo happen to have this. And that's where we try and create tooling around our updates process and our compose process that make sure we don't actually push out repos like that. That's one of the big, big missing pieces in Fedora land right now, is more tighter control over the repositories to make sure that they are consistent and that you don't wind up with broken dependencies.
There's no repo closure being run.
There's no repo closure being run because it is extremely cost prohibitive. And right now it takes close to 6 hours, if not longer, to compose updates repos because of multilib. And if we tried to throw in repo closure in the middle of that, we would essentially get about 4 hours into it, do a repo closure, find out, oh, with this new vision of multilib, you've got broken depths, now what? And you sort of have to, I mean, that's the excuse that we've been using for not working on it, but essentially you would get about 4 hours in, find out it would be broken, you'd have to start over with a reduced package set, and then have to start making some managerial type decision as, this is a security update, we're going to go ahead and push it because the people that can't get this installed need it installed. The people that can't will be able to get it installed later when these other things catch up. And it's a fun world to live in. I like my job. We're on the right track here. Creating repo data. Because live images do not allow you to make package choices, it just essentially dumps what's on the live image to your hard drive. They don't have to worry about repo data. But since Pungy allows the user to choose packages, we have to actually make repo data. One of the neat things that I do with Pungy is this. The group info, the things that you see in the installer, the GNOME group, or the graphical applications group, that is per repo defined. You can have one repository that has one idea of what should be in the GNOME group, and you have this other add-on repository that has this other idea of what should be in the GNOME group. And when you run Yum on a system, that has these repositories configured. Yum combines all that information inside of itself and presents that as a combined ideal to the user or to what it's doing to actually install the packages. I wanted to capture that ideal and continue it in the created media where you wouldn't necessarily have access to those upstream repos to get that view of group info. So I take the group data from all the different repositories you may have pointed Pungi at to do the compose, combine them all into one group data piece, and then the repo data that's on the Fedora CDs has that combined view. Yes?
The set of packages that are actually included in each of those package groupings,
mm-hmm.
How is that determined? I mean, there's so many packages out there. It's that
it is. There is a piece of XML data called comps. I could not tell you why it's named that. It's just the name that's been there since before I started playing with Red Hat Linux. Comps is the XML goo that defines the group names and the category names that the groups belong to, and then the package lists in each of those groups, and further down, which of those packages in those groups is considered mandatory, as in you cannot opt out of it, which of those are considered default, which you get them unless you opt out of it, and which ones are considered optional, which you don't get unless you opt into. We pretty much let package maintainers do what they will for these groups. The initial group data that exists in Fedora came from a very long history of Red Hat Linux. And that's really just been release engineering, product management, and special interest areas sort of agreeing upon this is what the GNOME desktop means, and this is what the KDE desktop means, and this is what system tools mean. That was inherited into Fedora, and then from there we sort of let individual package maintainers make decision as to this package is a GNOME desktop package, but I don't think everybody really needs it, so we'll just mark that as optional. Or this package really needs to be in the GNOME group, and you really shouldn't have the opportunity to not have this. It's part of the GNOME experience, so we're going to make that mandatory. So that module is open for all the Fedora package maintainers to commit to and make changes to. We do have a number of people that monitor that module, and when obviously wrong things are done, we go in and clean it up. But for the most part, it's a free-for-all. And for the most part, that's worked out pretty well. When we do the Fedora spin, which is the thing that gets most pushed out at release announcements, it's primarily picking the default and mandatory packages from the groups that we deem to be the Fedora spin. There's very few optional packages that we'll add in specifically, but there are some. Any other questions on repo data? Build install versus install. This is the phase in Pungi where we start running Anaconda tools on things, and in Live CD Creator, this is where we're actually just installing packages into the cheroot. The Anaconda tool that Pungi uses the most is called build install, and its purpose is to create a very minimal runtime environment that is very controlled. Installation of packages and upgrading of packages is nebulous at best, and it's always better to have a very controlled, known environment doing this than whatever happens to be on the user system at the time. It also prepares an initial RAM disk that automatically launches the Anaconda content and brings you into the install environment or the rescue environment. And it creates numerous boot options to initiate the install. It'll spit out a boot.iso or netinst ISO. We name it both, it's the same thing. Essentially, it has enough to boot the machine and the graphical stage 2 environment to actually perform the install. It also spits out just the kernel and just the initrd, which is very useful for doing network booting. At one time it spit out USB images. That's sort of gone away because we're going to have a tool that lets you take the boot.iso and put them on USB. And it also produces Xen kernel images that you want that could use to boot in a Xen environment. The livecd creator, as I said, it just installs the packages into Chroot. It is essentially creating the full runtime environment rather than a very minimal runtime environment. Both of these make use of the packages that you've gathered. In the case of Rawhide right now, the development tree of Fedora, when build install runs, it doesn't just look at the packages you've gathered, but we pass along the repositories where we gathered those packages from. So in the case where it requires something that we haven't actually gathered, build install can go out and grab what it needs from those repositories for the use of making its install environment. This is a pretty cool shift in how Pungy works. It allows you to make much, much smaller payloads while still being able to have a fully graphical installer. In the past, you had to put Anaconda, Anaconda Runtime, and all of its dependencies in your compose set, which ballooned the size up rather large. The livecd creator prepares an initial RAM disk for normal use, which is essentially the same thing you get if you make an NRD on a fully installed system. And it leaves the boot options to later parts of the livecd creator stack. That's that page. Any questions? Yes?
Does build install still need to run as root?
Yes, build install doesn't run as root because it does create loopback objects and stuffs data into those loopback objects. And for now, that is still a root operation.
So you haven't considered using CPIO, RAM disks, or GenAX2FS, which can run as non-root?
I think there's a bit of a misnomer. It's still a root operation, but there may be set UID binaries on your system that are taking care of that for you. The fuse stuff is all via a set UID binary. You can't get away with not being root at some point. It's just doing it for you rather than you escalating yourself to root to do it. That said, we haven't really looked too much into that. That's just not considered a problem area, and there are many problem areas that we could be looking at. But if somebody spent the time and the effort to go down that path, I don't think if the patches were reasonable, they would get turned away. That's certainly something that if anybody was interested in, more power to them. SE Linux. Some of you may have been in the previous talk that Dan Walsh was given about SE Linux. It is something that we have to consider both when preparing traditional sets and the live CD set. Both of these tools require that the system you're composing on be running SE Linux, at least in the permissive mode. In fact, I think if you run these tools in the enforcing mode, they may break. The SE Linux folks are working very hard on this. It's a very, very tough problem where you have a system policy running, say, for RHEL 5, and you're installing packages in a Chroot, say, for Fedora 10, which have a completely different policy and a completely different idea of what context should be, and how does the running kernel handle that? And so that's what they're really trying to tackle right now. But essentially, Pungy leaves SE Linux attributes to Anaconda during the install of the produced tree. What that means is we don't really break apart the packages that we've gathered. Anaconda does some of that when it creates its minimal build environment, and it does make sure that there's at least SE Linux enabled so that you can do file system labeling later. When Anaconda runs after the fact, after you've produced your media, you boot it, do an install, it will ensure that the files it's laying down have the proper labeling so that upon reboot, everything is happy. Livecd tools, after it's installed everything to the Chroot, it goes through and relabels all the files. It takes a little while to do this, but that ensures that all the files have the proper labeling so that when you boot the live image, you don't get a slew of SE Linux denials. Image making. Pungy has options for DVD, or rather just larger than CD ISO size, split media, or no ISOs at all. The way that these options are passed is one part in the kickstart file, which is the partition line. When Pungy has fed a Kickstart file that has a partition line, it takes that the size of that line, as long as the partition type is called ISO, as the upper boundary for the ISO size. It defaults to about 650 megs as the upper boundary to an ISO size. And that size is used during split media. What Pungy will do is, first it'll create an ISO of everything that you've composed, however big it is. That's essentially a DVD ISO. Most of the things we compose are under 4 gigs. Although with Blu-ray coming along and with the size of the distribution growing, that may actually become the Blu-ray media. Then you further split from there. It then divides the full size tree by the maximum ISO size you've listed to figure out how many split ISOs it needs to make, and then runs some various tools to break apart things into chunks that are logically continuous and makes the ISOs. Or you can just have no ISOs at all. You just skip that whole phase altogether. You just have the install tree, which is useful for network installs and whatnot. The Live CD tools have a couple of different end result options. The traditional for Live CD tools, as the name states, is a Live CD or an ISO image. That is typically squashed down, the file system is squashed down so it can actually fit. There are a back-end system for making virtualized images, more useful for launching in a virt environment. Or you can just have no image at all, it just produces the tree and you've now got a shroot of stuff. The Live CD tools are written in a way that they're extendable for backends, so that over time if people create new and wonderful ways of running software, we can tie that into the Live Creator so that you can create a live image for the new and wonderful ways of running software. This concludes really the quick and dirty rundown of what the tools do and what the tools are for. And beyond this, we can start exploring some config files. I'll show you a compose in process. And if any of you guys are interested, we can actually make some live images or make some traditional trees for you, or at least talk about the theory behind it. I know that it's lunchtime, and I think this tutorial was given a break so that people can go to lunch and come back for the second part, and I will not hold you away from food. But before that, is there any questions before we break? Great, everybody's hungry. Go enjoy lunch.